From a secret location in room 100 of 540 Jack Gibbs Boulevard, this is Craft. I'm your host, Doug Dangler. Journalist Sally Howard has written for the Sunday Times, The Telegraph, and Forbes on topics such as travel and celebrities like Daryl Hannah, Jimmy Choo, and Colin Firth. Read more about her at www.sallyhoward.net or follow her Twitter feed at Wandering Sal. Her latest book, The Kama Sutra Diaries, Intimate Journeys Through Modern India, covers her travels in India and her exploration of what she sees as a sexual and social revolution in that country. She uncovers territories from little-known, at least in the West, ancient erotic statues to the surprisingly little understood, like India's consumption of explicit web material. Welcome to Craft, Sally Howard.
Thank you.
Now, I'm sure you've gotten a lot of questions about what drew you to the topic of sexuality in India, but what I'd like to know is, how did this play with relatives, the older relatives in your family, when you described your latest book to them?
Yes, well, the older relatives in my family are quite broad-minded, I think. I mean, my grandma, who's one of my biggest cheerleaders and is now 94, read the book three times from cover to cover and just said, oh, it's rather warm, isn't it? It's saucier than the novels I usually read. So I think they enjoyed it. I think they worried a little bit about me being on the road alone in India, which, although ostensibly safe, obviously we know about the rates of rape and the attacks, which are sort of gathering pace, unfortunately, on lone female tourists on the subcontinent. So they're worried about that, but they're used to me being on the road now. So they have to, you know, it's been years since I've been flouting their wishes. So it's fine. They enjoyed me doing the project.
So tell me about the evolution of the book. You write in the introduction that you've been going to India back and forth for maybe the past 15 years. So that makes a lot of sense about how it arose for you. But share that with our listeners about how you decided to choose this topic to write about.
Yeah, well, I've had a long relationship, as you suggest. I've had a long relationship with India. I first went there as a backpacker in my early 20s and was struck, as many people are, by the kind of living colour and chaos of India, and also the contrasts. And often these are along the lines of sexuality and romance and also love. Obviously, we have the Taj Mahal, which is the biggest mausoleum to romantic love ever built by a kind of grieving monarch. And then you have the Kama Sutra, which is the most sort of complete compendium on sexual love. But then at the same time, you have a nation where young people fear to hold hands in public and are often attacked for doing so by the police with truncheons. You have this mood of repression. So I was really interested in these contrasts. And as a writer who writes about human interest stories and about development too, and women's issues and travel, all of these ideas seem to be collated in the idea of in India's sort of sexual dysfunction and sexual revolution, which the final argument of the book is that this country is on the cusp of its own sexual revolution that's very different to ours in the West.
Right. And a lot of the things that you bring up and talk about, they seem to come back to one of your travel companions who was married at one time and is no longer. And she works with the trope of the, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this correctly, but the gig, the good Indian girl, and the bad Indian.
The G.I.G., yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about that, because I think that she's kind of an embodiment of what you have in mind for the changing sexual mores of India.
Well, this is it. And she was my counterpart. And I was wary of going to investigate this topic as a white Westerner. And there's a sensitivity, understandably, in India to the many people who go there and write travel books and write nonfiction books about India. And I thought, if I traveled with someone who is a contemporary of mine, who was very much affected by all of these sort of themes and the social changes in India, seeing things through her eyes would be very illuminating for me and would also be illuminating for an Indian reader, because the book has been released in India. But she is walking this tightrope walk, really, that women have to walk between being the demure, ideal Indian woman and having all of these sort of pressures of a kind of modernizing force of young people wanting to be together and wanting to have love unions rather than arranged unions. So it's young women who are at the front line of this. They have their parents wanting them to be a good girl and serve the chai, and then they have pressure perhaps to have sex before marriage as never before. And she's one of the first of the middle class sort of generation who's had the sort of confidence, really, to divorce her husband, who was in a very unhappy arranged marriage, and he was basically abusive. But, you know, obviously traditionally until very recently, she would have endured that relationship. So, yeah, she's at the vanguard of a new Indian woman. So very interesting to travel with her.
The book was published in India. What's been the reaction to your book?
Yeah, so the book was published in the UK at the end of last year, and India only recently, actually last month. So the US launch follows on the tail of that, a kind of month after. So far it's been good. The reviews in India have been good, but you do expect something of a backlash. There is quite a culture in India of people disliking certain topics being mentioned. I think my sort of positing of the fact that there's a sexual revolution afoot, especially now when, as probably most of the listeners know, a new Indian prime minister has been sworn in, who comes from a very much a very kind of right-wing Hindu background. And this sort of comes from the idea of a Hinduism and promoting a demure Indian woman, and sees any sort of social change, and specifically sexual change, as a westernized import, which is incorrect, as my book shows. So it's a very it'll be interesting to see how the reaction plays out, because it's a very sensitive time around all of these issues in India at the moment.
Okay. Is it getting a lot of press, or is there a lot of press about the what you see as the emergent sexual revolution in India? Is that something that that is being talked about, say, frequently in newspapers and in
Others? I mean, certainly sort of aspects of it, such as, you know, as we know, that the terrible gang rape that occurred in Delhi at the end of 2012 that led to a change in the law, and has now criminalized harassment, stalking. So all of the issues around rape and sexual violence are being very much addressed. I think in the kind of the chattering classes and the newspapers that represent them, there's a fear of this sort of youth quake that's happening, that's very similar to ours in the West, that gave rise to the sexual revolution in the West. And there's a fear of what it represents, you know, an attempt to sort of suppress young people. And young people are, and people under 60% of the population is under 25. So in a sense, this social change is unstoppable. But the mood in India, especially from the sort of the mainstream press, is a fear of the implications of this.
One of the things that struck me the most as I read the book was the plight of women in India. It almost overwhelmed for me the research that you had done in the other areas, because it seemed so difficult and dismaying and unhappy. They're, as you said, subject to many sorts of abuses and things like that. And I'm wondering how you came away or dealt with some of those feelings about that you write about so persuasively in the book, how you got around the feeling of being very, like you said, threatened or worried about safety in that area. And I don't mean to, by the way, demonize India along those lines. We've got difficulties in, you know, many areas of like large cities, I suppose, in the U.S.
Yes, I mean, and according to, you know, any agency reports, the UN a couple of years ago designated it as the worst country in the world to be a woman, for sort of factors such as female infanticide and dowry murder and acid attacks. And obviously it is a dreadful place to be a woman, specifically a woman of a lower caste. Incidentally, you know, the pressure is a lot less on sort of middle class and upper class women. But I think in terms of my experience there, I don't think it was, you know, I don't think, as I say, I don't really feel that threatened, because even though there is this sort of streak of sexual violence, really the sexual violence is experienced by women, and often women within marriage. 60% of Indian married women experience sexual violence in a given year. So this is this sort of deep-seated problem. But for me as an individual traveller, I often find that I'm looked after,
I also want to point out that there's a lot of really interesting material in the book that is maybe not something we can necessarily discuss on the radio, but I really encourage people to read about it, about the many fascinating aspects you found about, say, the ancient erotic statues.
Yeah,
I have to say the descriptions of them were surprising, and all the permutations were sort of surprising that they've survived for a long time, and people just take it sort of for granted. Oh, yes, there's a, you know, people in Congress right on that building, and it's not something that I can recall seeing very many places in
travels. Isn't it peculiar? It's peculiar, but it's so... Exactly. It's such a sort of, and it's not just in Khajuraho, which is the place that has its very famous kind of erotic 10th to 11th century temples. These friezes, these sort of kind of pornographic friezes, pepper the subcontinent. And I think, you know, they're not like our kind of version of pornography. But in a way, they are very exuberant. They come from this sort of tantric, long-running history of kind of open carnality that Hinduism had. And they, you know, they're good fun. They've got sort of a sense of humor, you know, that you sort of turn the corner. I've got an example in the book of, you know, you turn the corner of one temple and you see that there's a sort of court maiden who's in flagrante with a temple acolyte. And Ganesh, the god, is sort of peeking. He's a voyeur, but you only see it when you turn the corner. And how many religions would sort of depict one of their key gods as a peeping Tom? Very few.
Right, yeah.
Very few. So, yeah, I mean, it's in a sense, it's one of the wonderful, and again, one of the anachronistic things about this country, that today it's very sexually repressed, or currently sexually repressed. And, you know, you can sort of look at the side of an ancient temple and see, you know, a parade of interlocked copulating figures. Fascinating.
Mm-hmm. What's your next work? Are you going to continue writing about India, writing about sexuality? What's your next adventure?
I mean, those sort of things are certainly my taste buds. So I will be looking at things around women and sexuality. I'm quite interested in Rakshaki, or the sort of traditional form of belly dance, and how it's sort of changing and evolving, and the sort of situation around the Arab Spring and belly dance, because I find that very interesting. You know, a lot of those countries are the cradle of belly dancing. And, you know, this sort of history of female sexuality that came through the belly dancing. But it was sort of colonized by the West. So very sort of similar themes. So watch this space, but maybe that. But having a break first, because I'm quite tired after the last book.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. I just came back about 4 weeks of travel. And with someone who's a travel writer, why do you do it? There's a certain part of me that says, no, I like seeing the other places. But you come back exhausted. You come back. You've got mountains of laundry. You've got to catch up with everything that happened while you were gone. When I talk to somebody who's a travel writer, I think, what is it that spurs you on to travel? Because I can see the exciting side of it. I also see this sort of really inconvenient side of it. And you were talking in the book about taking, I think you called it an auto cab.
Auto rickshaw, yes.
Auto rickshaw, yes.
So it's like a two-stroke engine. So it's like a sort of small, like a motorbike with a kind of a car, I guess, mounted on the back of it, open-sided.
Right.
Yeah.
I can only imagine as in pretty unpleasant to ride in.
More unpleasant because of the sort of the sort of nasal, you know, it's so sort of, especially Indian cities, you've got no protection from the kind of quite redolent stench of the streets and sewers. I think that's probably the worst thing. And I would often cover my scarf in a really sort of pungent perfume and kind of put it over my mouth, and yeah. But you know, it's fun. You're kind of living within amongst the city, and you know, but Indian cities are not easy to get things done and get around, but they're great fun. They're great fun. And I'm lucky that I no longer get the terrible kind of Delhi belly or any of the kind of terrible illnesses, which really helps actually, because that really hampers you in India when you're kind of knocked out after 3 weeks, you know.
I imagine that hampers you in any form of travel to be experiencing that sort of a sickness.
Exactly. But I love it. I love being on the road, and I love, you know, it really sort of fires me to meet new people and have new experiences. And so what if I occasionally have to hand wash a pair of knickers? I think that's a happy.
Yes, I just spent, like I said, 4 weeks doing all of that in the sink.
And right.
I refused to go to a laundromat.
No, and if you in India, you know, you go to the sort of the laundry wallahs who sort of wash all of your clothes on stones, and they come back all dyed the same colour and sort of a slightly strange shape. So you're better off hand washing.
Thank you very much, Sally Howard, for talking to me today. And again, the book is called The Kama Sutra Diaries, Intimate Journeys Through Modern India, and you can read about it at your site, sallyhoward.net, or follow you on Twitter at Wandering Sal.
Wonderful. Thanks, Doug.
Thank you. For more information from my guests, visit www.craftheshow.com. This is Doug Dangler. Until next time, be creative.